IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello, and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We are on the road this time. We have been.
We've been on some roads we've never been on before, really paralleling California-Mexico border, just taking a kind of a scenic route through the desert to get here to Indian Wells or Palm Springs, where we're imbibing in tennis, watching tennis, not playing.
Well, imbibing is a good description, because we're drinking it in. It is everywhere. We love coming here. We've been coming here for a lot of years. Not every year, but we come often, and it is so wonderful to see all these amazing young people who have honed their skill in tennis remarkably. It's incredible.
We flew into San Diego and then took the road, the Interstate 8 that we'd never been on, and it goes along the Mexican border, and it goes down into this really interesting, I guess interesting is the right word, town, which is called El Centro. And it's just a little town of maybe 40,000 people, and it's entirely below sea level.
How often do you see that? I mean, that was amazing. It was just fun to see country that we haven't seen before. We stopped at Del Coronado, which we love, just to have a little brunch, I'm sorry to even tell you that, because I wish you were with us, but no. Anyway, it really was a delight to be driving in new places. I love new places. I don't like going back to the same old place again.
That's our running. We had another run-in with that disagreement last night, because there's one restaurant here called Shabu Shabu, which is Japanese for swish swish, and it's a special kind of Kobe beef that they cook at your table, and I really like it. And I'm like, let's go back to Shabu Shabu. And Linda's like, well, if we do, that'll be one restaurant we'll never get to, because we've gone back to the same one again. And we have, how many times do we have that conversation?
Oh, a lot. The same place or the same restaurant.
My point is, if you know it's good, why not go back to it?
I know, but there's so many other places.
Yeah, but
you
have no idea if they're going
to
be good.
Oh, but they'll be interesting, even if they're not good.
But you may waste your time and your money on a place that's unknown to you.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, don't worry. We're not going to get a divorce.
I think this whole trip, we have some friends who are like, what is it that you guys see in tennis? Because we have been, we go to a lot of tennis events, the four majors, the U.S. Open, the Wimbledon, the Australian Open,
the French Open.
And the real reason is because they're really fun places to visit.
And also because I'm such a good tennis player.
Yes, I was going to say.
I can't play worth a darn, but Rick is an outstanding tennis player. In fact,
No, don't get into that.
He is ranked number one in Utah and number two in the Intermountain West. And
old age group. I did just win a pretty big tournament in Phoenix the other day. But hey, the point is, this really leads into our topic for today, which we're going to call, quote, if it's important to you, it's important to me, right? That's a little phrase. Do we attribute that to anyone? Is that a quote from someone, or is
that
something?
Yeah, but I can't even remember where that
maybe
came
that's something
from.
You made up.
Maybe as personified by our dinner last night, if it's important for you to have Shabu Shabu, let's go, even though it's an hour. Half an hour each way to the restaurant. But I do think that's an important concept, especially in a marriage. Sometimes with your kids, not always. If it's important to you, it's not always important to us. But I do think that it is really important. It's an important in a marriage. It's important in so many arenas in life because we have to realize how important things are to other people. I get to give a keynote address to a mom conference this weekend. And we have a daughter, lots of wonderful daughters there. In fact, they're doing a podcast that is so fun. It's called In the Arena with the Iyer Sisters, if anybody wants to tune in. But Sadie is a therapist. She got her degree at Columbia and finally had her kids off and pretty well cooked. And so she's becoming a half-time therapist, but she has a wonderful idea about seeing through the eyes of your children and seeing through the eyes of other people.
Making sure that those you love and those you care about know that they're really seen by you.
And that they feel seen. And I think that that is really key to, if it's important to you, it's important to me, because sometimes our kids think crazy things are important. They think, especially little kids, and you know, you can't always do this with a 3-year-old or a 2-year-old tantrum, but it is so important to look through other people's eyes and think, what could they be thinking? What could they be thinking? And once you get into those eyes, you think, this is really important to them. It's not important to me, but it's really important to them. So I need to validate that.
And if I love them, if these are family members, then the simple fact that it's important to them makes it important to you.
Right. Right. And sometimes it's hard to make those kind of silly things important to you, but it is important to them. We, along with you listening, have extended family issues, I'm sure. We have a very complicated family. I was explaining this to you last night, honey, that things that you may not have even known. Because it's so complicated in our family.
Your growing up family.
Yeah, my extended family. We had a second marriage and alcoholism and lots of bad feelings with extended family, kids and so on. And it really is interesting to think, why are people reacting like this? It's a really good exercise to do that and then think, you know, if that's important to you, then it's important for me to understand.
So let's go back a little and give you our personal history on that little phrase. If it's important to you, then it's important to me. Because way back in prehistoric time when we got married, we realized, well, I mean, one thing to understand is nobody really knows their bride or their groom. I mean, we think we know each other. We know we're in love, but there's so much that we don't know when we're young about each other. But I remember one conversation we had way back then, honey, on our differences. And I was a sports guy. I loved basketball. I played basketball and tennis in college, and I wanted you to be an athlete.
Desperately.
And I wanted you to like the same things I did. You, on the other hand, I'm really oversimplifying this, obviously, were a teacher and a musician and a violinist, and you kind of wanted me to love those things as much as you did. And I remember one sort of naive agreement that we made, which was, oh, it's going to be simple. I'll teach you to play tennis and we'll become doubles partners. We'll play a lot of mixed doubles and it'll all be great. And you reciprocated and said, well, I'll help you to work on the cello and you can play duets with me on my violin, and both music and sports will just become equally loved by both of us. And we'll, you know, both be good at both of them. And
as you could guess, that did not happen that way. In fact, in the car on the way down, you did say, let's see, do you think we've been to more tennis matches or symphonies?
Well, going back to that early days, there was a consolation prize, right? I mean, the expectation didn't come about. You did not become a great, avid tennis player and mixed doubles partner, and I did not become a great cellist, believe me. But you played a little, right, yeah, and you enjoyed the game and started to like the game, and I got to where I could play Pachelbel's Canon in D, which only has eight notes.
Eight notes, you know, you can figure that out. And
the cello part.
Collected two cellos, and our kids and grandkids have taken them off and used them well. And I just think that, you know, it was really interesting how that evolved, because I do love watching tennis. I think it's amazing. And you are sometimes dragging me to the symphony because I don't have time to go to the symphony tonight, you know, because we live in downtown Salt Lake City sometimes, and it's just right there close to us. So anyway, it really is interesting what it can do when you think, you know, what's important to you is important to me. And sometimes what's important to the other person seems so silly. But
well, I mean, that's the point. The consolation prize, well, you didn't become a great tennis player and I didn't become a great cellist. We did become equally, I think it's fair to say, equally interested in the thing the other person was interested in. And it is true. I do have to drag you to the symphony now sometimes, because you've taught me to love classical music. And to some extent, I've taught you to love tennis and other sports. And you are, I'll tell you, this woman sitting next to me is not only a great tennis fan, she's a great basketball fan. She loves the Utah Jazz. She knows the game as well as I do. And
no,
and you did that initially out of love for me, and I did the classical music out of love for you.
And love for my mother. A sports fanatic. She loved sports of all kind, and she grew up really gifted. So part of my problem in life is that I am not gifted in sports at all.
I think Linda could have been a great runner. I think if you
could have run. I mean, you know, they did not do track for women in high school. No, they could not have. But it really is amazing how life evolves. And we've been together a long time. It's taken a lot of years to come around to all this. But we do think it's really important to take a look at the people around you and see what is really important to them, and then make it important to you.
So we're going to explore this idea in even a little more depth in the second half, and talk a little about why a key in any relationship, but particularly a marriage, is to say and really mean that little phrase, if it's important to you, it's important to me. Sometimes what that does, by the way, is make the other person realize that what you're talking about really isn't that important to them. But if it is important to your spouse or to a person in your family you love, then that ought to automatically make it very, very important to you. So we also may tell you, share a few more things. I have a press pass for this tournament because of this podcast and because of some other writing I occasionally do. And so I had a real interesting opportunity yesterday to interview Novak Djokovic, the greatest tennis player in the world. Some people say the GOAT, the greatest of all time. And he doesn't play until tomorrow for his first round here, but I'll share a little of that with you, and we'll go a little deeper on this idea of if it's important to you,
it's important to me. So hang on, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back. Richard's going to be talking about one of the great tennis players of all time, Novak Djokovic.
I don't want to get up in the weeds on this, but, you know, for you who are tennis fans, and even probably for those who aren't, a remarkable thing in the tennis world is that for two decades, we've had this unbelievable three-way rivalry between Rafa Nadal and Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic. And It is remarkable. I think it's unparalleled in any sport because each of the three of them have now won 20 or more Grand Slams. That's the four big tournaments of the year. And prior to these three, no one had ever won more than 15. And here along come three players in the same era having to compete against each other and between the three of them win over 60 of these Grand Slams, more than 20 each, whereas no one else had ever in history won more than 15. And so there's this debate that goes on among tennis fans. Well, who is the GOAT? Who's the greatest of all time? Is it Roger Federer? Is it Novak Djokovic? Or is it Rafa Nadal? And Nadal was supposed to play here in Indian Wells. Federer has now retired. Rafa and Djokovic were supposed to play here, but Rafa's not doing well. He's having some injury problems still. So it's just Djokovic who's in the tournament. So
now, and if you don't know anything about tennis, hang on, because this is a pretty fun story, even if you don't love tennis.
Yeah, it is a fun story. And so I had the chance to interview Djokovic the other day in a little press conference. And the question I asked him was, how do you ever think to yourself the pros and cons of having your career overlap exactly with Federer and with Nadal? And do you ever think how many Grand Slams you've won? 24 now. That's the more than any other person in history. Do you ever think how many you might have won had there never been a Roger Federer, or had there never been a Rafa Nadal and it had just been you? I mean, you know, would you have won 40 instead of 25? Would you have won 50? I mean, the combined three of you have won over 60. What do you think would have happened? And full disclosure, I've always been a Federer fan, not so much a Djokovic fan. But he kind of won me over with his answer. He said, you know, I don't know how many I would have won, but I know one thing for sure. I am a much better player than I would have been had it not been for the rivalry I had with Federer and Nadal. And then he kind of went on. I guess he liked the question because he went on for 7 or 8 minutes and kind of gave the history of that and said, you know, I'm the youngest of the three, but only by a little bit. And at first, it seemed to me that I would never beat either of those two guys. And finally, in 2008, I won the Australian Open and thought, okay, now I've finally won a major. I'm finally on a par with those two guys. I'll be able to compete with them. And I had in my mind this idea of the big three, even though no one else had said it yet, because I hadn't done anything. I hadn't won anything. So he said, I won in 2008 in Australia, and I thought, now I'm on a level with them. But then he said, 3 years went by, and I didn't win another major. I couldn't beat those two guys, no matter what I did. But finally, in 2011, I won the Australian Open for the second time. And that year, I felt like, okay, now I've reached their level. And it turned out he had. And then we went for 15 years or so where almost every one of the four majors every year was won by one of those three guys. There were a couple of others. Andy Murray won a couple, and Stan Wawrinka, who we saw play yesterday, won a couple of them. But basically, it was that big three, and that rivalry just went on and on and on. And now finally Roger's retired, and so Djokovic said, you know, that's the history of it. And I don't think so much about what if, how many would I have won without those two guys being there. What I think about is how much better they made me, and how much better the three of us made each other. And I thought, well, you know, that's kind of a related lesson, Linda, to if it's important to you, it's important to me, because you get better and you get more broadly defined and you get more diverse and more interesting if you have those around you that make you better. And if you, in our case, become interested in what the other person is interested in. I mean, so many couples think they want to find someone who's just like them, who has the same interests they do, who likes the same things they do, who, you know, just fits seamlessly into each other's lives because of common ground and common interest. And actually, that would be a narrowing effect. That would be, hey, we like these things. This is what we do. But if you say about your spouse or about your really close friends, how glad I am that you have interests I don't have and expertise that I don't have and insight and knowledge about areas or fields or interests that I don't share, what a great thing. Now I can learn from you. I want you to teach me not only about the thing that you like, but I want you to help me to become interested in it like you are.
Yeah, I'm thinking of, while you're saying that, I'm thinking about our children and their spouses and how different they are in many ways and how much they enjoy learning what the other one is good at, because I've never really thought about that before. They're great people, and it's not that they don't argue and that they don't disagree, because they do. All of us do.
But I think they embrace each other's lives.
But the more they can embrace each other's lives. I mean, some things become annoying, you know.
Yeah.
I can think of a couple just really annoying things that you are fixated on. But it really is interesting how important that is to realize and look through that other person's eyes and see that this is really important to them, even if it seems really silly to you. I'm not talking about some of the little idiosyncrasies that you have, honey, but
why does that word annoy and idiosyncrasy keep coming to your mouth?
I know, it's true. But it is really important to take a step back and think, why is this person, why does he or she love what she does? Why is that important? And is that important to me? If it isn't, maybe I need to make it a little more important to me.
Yeah, I need to give it a chance. I need to not say, I'm me and I like these things and you're you and you like these things. So some things are important to me and some are important to you, and never the twain shall meet. That's the opposite of the approach of broadening and learning that we're kind of suggesting.
Well,
you mentioned our kids. I'm thinking of several examples there, but go on, I'll come back.
Well, I'm just going to say some things never really become that important to you that seem funny in your partner, but you can be more tolerant. You say, I understand why you like that, but to each his own. I'm not with
it. And if it's important to you, it's important to me, even if I never embrace it. So there's sort of two steps, right? Anything that's important to you is important to me because I love you. And some things, I want to embrace them and sort of become partners with you on them because you can teach me so much.
Yeah, and some things you just like, well, that's just you. That's you being you. And that's okay.
Sure, but those are the little things, the big things you want to become involved together. So I was thinking of our kids. I mean, we're going next week, believe it or not. I talk about ours on the road. We're going to drive the back roads of Idaho, to go to a bull sale because our oldest daughter is married to a guy who grew up on a farm in Ashton, Idaho, raising potatoes and also cows, bulls, livestock. And we've never been, every spring have a bull sale where the best bulls get sold to at an auction, at a big auction. And, you know, here's our daughter, Saren, who, you know, was a liberal arts college graduate of Wellesley College and then did a master's at Harvard and is really academic and really tuned into the arts and to a lot of things that are a long way from the farm. But she has done just what we're talking about. If it's important to you, it's important to me. And she loves now that farm and being there with Jared and going to the bull sale. And
I love that they take our grandchildren there to that farm, because that's, I was raised on a teeny tiny little farm and we had potatoes in our backyard, but nothing like that. And I am so delighted that our grandchildren get to have that experience. My parents are gone. The farm is sold. It is so fun to see them really just take that in completely. They all love being up there. We love it. And we've finally decided we've got to go to the bull sale and see that. These giant bulls are so well cared for all year that they sell for $10,000. I don't know.
Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. It's amazing. And then dropping down to our youngest, to Charity, who, you know, is a traveler, just loves to travel, had been all over the world before she got married and lived in different places and so on, and married Ian, who's a wonderful guy, but hadn't traveled basically at all. They met while Ian was a doctoral student at Stanford, and they got married, and to Ian's credit, I think he at some point consciously said, "Charity, if travel's important to you, it's important to me." And in that case, he took over.
Goodness.
That guy now wants to travel all the time. And while they lived in London, his goal was to visit every country in Europe, which is no small thing.
And they pretty much did it.
Did it. And it's just another good example of saying, hey, let me get into your life and what are your passions and your loves. And if I can, I will adopt them as loves of my own. And if I can't, they'll still be important to me because they're important to you.
Yeah, they're just remarkable. In fact, they have taken kids I would never take. Places I would never take our kids to, because they're little kids and it's miserable to travel with little kids, I think, but they have just done it. They're continuing to do it. One weekend he takes a couple of kids and goes to Bryce Canyon, and she goes to somewhere else, and then the next weekend they all go together. It is just remarkable. And I think it is a matter of thinking, if this is important to you, it's important to me, and now it's my passion too.
Well, and one other example from the middle of our family, we've talked a lot about Jonah and Asia, our fifth child, Jonah.
Living in Hawaii, because we've talked a lot about them, because we spent time with them.
But on this subject, I think to Asia's credit, when she realized that what was important to Jonah was non-consumption and conservation and living well within means and living a simplified life and learning how to, you know, follow his definition, which was, you know, there's two ways to be financially independent. One is to have unlimited money. The other is to have very limited needs. And Jonah wanted to live a limited need, simplified life. And Asia adopted that wholly. And they're a great partnership on it. Again, if it's important to you, it's important to me. And I think the what we love about that thought is it draws people together. It's the opposite of, well, we're pretty different, but we'll just coexist and we'll try to not get on each other's nerves too much.
Well, or go to the other extreme. It's like, I can't do this. You know, you're obsessed with this and I can't do it. I'm not a bit interested in what you're interested in. And that helps. I mean, that is part of the system too. I mean, sometimes it doesn't work very well if they don't look up and say, hey, if you're interested in that, I am too.
So again, I think the bottom line lesson is, if you're in a relationship, if you're married, try your hardest to take empathy to the next level and to really seek oneness in terms of the things that you both embrace. And even if you can't do that, it's not always possible, and even if something your spouse is doing just strikes you as frankly not only not important, but sort of a waste
crazy
of time or you know, completely irrelevant, instead of making that judgment, simply say, hey, you know, if it's important to you, it's important to me. And once in a while, the other person will say, well, you know, it actually isn't that important to me. But if they have to fight you to convince you it is important, then, you know,
that's
the
right.
wrong chemistry. So
we hope that we've given you a few things to think about today. We all can do better at that, including me and you. And we are so glad you joined us today, and we hope you'll hang in next time on Ayers on the Road.
See you next week.